77. Green screen. The broken wheel on her rollerboard woke, like some ominous precision measuring device, as she pulled it along the corridor to the rear lobby. She'd gone to say goodbye to the ferret, though she doubted she'd ever be able to explain that to anyone. Gareth might understand, who had his own odd ways with fear. She saw the empty scooter chair, abandoned beside the glass slab door, where Robert now stood.
"Congratulations, Miss Henry," he said,
inexplicably and rather tenderly, as he opened and held the door for her. Unwilling, after more definitely having noted a multiplication of identical follies in the watercolours upstairs, plus her moment just now with the ferret, to risk further liminality, she thanked him, smiling, and clicked swiftly on, out beneath a porte-cochere she supposed had been built for actual coaches, and on toward the back of the tall Slow Foods van, drawn up near it. Tall, the van, a big one, a newly painted a rich aubergine, lettered and trimmed in a dull bronze, as if the Queen herself were vegan, if vegan was what Slow Food was about, and fond of Aubrey Beardsley. "Hello," said the driver, brunette under her Foley-esque cap, and prettily Norwegian. Both a professional truck driver and an actress. Hollis knew all this because she'd overheard Gareth hiring her via some third party, and hadn't realised until now that this was what that had been about. "There are two zippered panels inside these doors," the driver said, indicating the back of the truck. "I'll open the first for you, then close it, then you'll open and close the second. It's to make sure no light escapes. Clear?" The girl smiled, and Hollis found herself smiling back. Aside from driving, Hollis knew, she was there to engage the authorities, should there be any trouble with where they were parked later. Now the girl opened one of the van's rear doors, revealing a taut wall of black canvas, like something in a conjuring trick, and climbed three very sturdy-looking folding aluminum steps, where she raised a tall vertical zip. "Give me your bag." Hollis passed it up. The driver put it through the slit, climbed down. Hollis went up the steps, through the slit, the zip's plastic teeth odd against her wrist, then turned and pulled the zipper most of the way down. The girl pulled it the rest of the way, leaving Hollis in absolute darkness. Behind her, the other zip went up, admitting startlingly bright light. She turned and saw Gareth, and behind him, Pep, wearing what she instantly knew must be the ugly T-shirt. "I didn't think it would literally be that ugly," she said, stepping through the second zip. It was. Pep, in black cyclist's pants, wore the largest, ugliest T-shirt she'd ever seen, in a thin, cheap-looking cotton, the colour of ostomy devices, that same imaginary Caucasian flesh tone. There were huge features screened across it in dull black half-tone, asymmetrical eyes at breast height, a grim mouth at crotch level. Later, she'd be unable to say exactly what had been so ugly about it, except that it was somehow beyond punk, beyond art, and fundamentally, somehow, an affront. Diagonals at the edges continued around the sides and across the short loose sleeves. Pep leered at her, or perhaps only looked at her, and pulled the strap of a dark green messenger bag over his head, tucking what she recognised as Gareth's other party favour into it.
"Don't forget to take that bag off," Gareth said.
He was seated in a black workstation chair that appeared to have been taped to the shiny aubergine floor.
"Queer the visuals, otherwise."
Pep leered, or perhaps smiled, in reply, then stepped past her, through the open zip in the second scrim of black canvas. She saw the same hideous features repeated on the back of the shirt. He bent, picked up her bag, deposited it inside, then ran the zipper down, vanishing. She heard the other zipper being opened,
then closed, then the sound of the door being closed. She turned to Gareth, but saw that he was mounting his black laptop in a sort of clasp that extended from a framework of black plastic pipe. The pipe, like a geometric model of a rectangular solid, almost filled the interior of the van. Like Gareth's chair, it was held in place with that non-reflective black tape that kept film sets together. There were things mounted on the framework. Two plasma screens, one above the other, cables, boxes, and bits the cables plugged into, and several very stylish-looking LED lamps.
"Where are we going?"
asked Heidi, sounding oddly subdued, seated on the floor at the front, her back against another centrally zippered sheet of black canvas.
"Should know shortly,"
Gareth said, as he finished locking his computer in place, so that it sat before him on an invisible desk.
"Where's AJ gone?"
"Wherever we're going," Gareth said,
"but with Charlie."
It all smelled of pipe cement, new electronics, lighting.
"Sit down beside Heidi,"
Gareth said, as Hollis heard the driver's door slam shut.
"There's foam."
Hollis did.
"Crazy,"
said Heidi, eyes wide, looking from Hollis to the rig that surrounded them.
"Claustrophobia."
"What about it?" Hollis asked.
"I've got it,"
said Heidi. The driver started the engine. The van was moving away from Cabinet.
"Deal,"
said Hollis silently to the ferret, though she hadn't really been aware of making one.
"I've never heard you say anything about claustrophobia,"
Hollis said.
"Fujiwara says it was being married to Fuckstick. Why I went to him in the first place. I thought it was just wanting to beat the living fuck out of somebody, you know?"
"You don't think it was?"
"When he got me calmed down, building models, I could see that it was not wanting to feel trapped."
"Did you finish your breast chaser?" Thinking it might help to keep her talking.
"Not enough detail,"
Heidi said, sadly.
"Have an ETA?"
Gareth asked someone. He was conversing in clipped, but genial near code, with some unknown number of people, his headset plugged into a switchbox attached to an octopus galaxy of phones.
"How about us?" said Heidi. "Do we?"
"Hush! He has to concentrate.
Understand what he's doing?"
"No, but it's complicated."
"AJ's cousin got him up in whiteface, filled the notch in his nose with putty, dyed his hair shit brown, and sprayed stuff on the sides."
"They want him to be mistaken for Milgram."
"I got that."
"Why?"
"Someone's kidnapped Big End Star researcher. They're demanding Milgram in exchange for him." "Why would they?"
"Actually," Hollis said, "it seems to be because you stuck the man who was following you with that dart, though Milgram had already fucked him up himself." Heidi, her large white hands locked tightly across her knees, black nails chipped, regarded Hollis from just above them with utmost seriousness.
"Are you shitting me?"
"No," said Hollis.
"What are they? Pussies?"
Hollis, framing her response, saw that Heidi was struggling not to laugh. She dug her swiftly in the ribs with a knuckle.
"Win,"
announced Gareth, his hand extended to mute all phones.
"The scrubs. The model worked. Optimal venue. Unless there's wind."
"What model?" Hollis asked.
"Someone at the University of Colorado ran one for us. Scrubs was best for us. Excuse me."
He took his hand off the box and began to type. The van slowed, honked, changed lanes, stopped briefly, turned.
"Scrubs, dear," he said to someone else. "Need you in the air. Don't run lights. Don't speed. Get there."
"What's happening?"
Heidi asked quietly.
"I think they've agreed on where they'll do the exchange," Hollis said. "I think we like it."
"They're getting one ugly-ass version of Bollywood boyfriend."
Heidi shrugged.
I thought you were trying not to go there.
Trying?
Agreed Heidi.
Do you feel better?
Yeah, said Heidi, and reached under the majorette jacket to rub her ribs.
But it'll come back if I can't get out of this fucking truck.
Somewhere to go now, Hollis said.
Not yet, Gareth said to someone. But she's airborne.
Then he said something in a language Hollis didn't recognize at all, and fell silent.
What language was that?
She asked, as the van made another turn.
Catalan, he said.
Didn't know you spoke it.
I can only say very rude things about his mother.
He sat up straighter.
Pardon.
He fell silent again.
Fully operative, he said, finally. Optimal so far.
He was quiet again.
I appreciate that, but no. You'll have to keep them back, well out of the area. I have a lot on the ground, too many moving parts to have any one of yours in the mix.
Not negotiable, no. She saw his hand come down on the switch box.
Bugger.
What?
Bastard's got a private ambulance on the prowl, so he says. Specialists sitting up late in Harley Street, in case Chombo should be damaged.
I hadn't thought of that.
I had. We've medical backup ourselves. Big N's ambulance won't just have medics in it. Snatch squad for Milgrim, that would be.
Does he know where it is?
They call him first.
How bad is that?
No telling, he said.
He took his hand off the box and immediately smiled.
Darling, he said. Brilliant. Above it? Give me the fix.
4.
Moving away from it.
Pull back. Drop. Approach about 2 feet off the ground. Car between you.
Need the number, make, model. Then make sure no one's inside it.
But no IR, in case it flares off the glass and they see it.
Infrared, said Heidi.
The uppermost of the two screens, mounted on black pipe, came on. A washed-out oscilloscope green. He dialed the lighting down. Hollis and Heidi edged forward on the foam, peering up at the screen. Image from a moving camera, abstract, unreadable. Then Hollis saw a big British license plate, as if recorded by some robot on the bottom of the sea.
Good girl, Gareth said. Now raise it a bit and give us a look inside. Then follow them. The one with the parcel, that's Gracie. Get on him and stay on him.
He touched the box again. Turned.
We don't like a parcel, he said to Fiona.
Then back to the green screen.